Broadcasting live from Roberta's in Bushwick, Brooklyn, you're listening to HeritageRadioNetwork.com.
In some of my songs, I have casually mentioned the fact that I like to drink beer. This little song is more to the point. Roll out the barrel and lend me your ears. I like beer. It makes me a jolly good fellow. I like beer. It helps me unwind, and sometimes it makes me feel mellow.
Welcome to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. I'm Jimmy Carboni from Jimmy's Number 43. Today is January 24th, 2012. I'm joined tonight by my co-host, Jen Swertman from The Blind Tiger.
Hi, Jimmy. It's been a while.
Jen, we're going to talk to you a lot about your trips and adventures.
Yeah, I've been having some fun.
Some other things. And after we give our shout-out to Beer Sessions Radio is sponsored by GreatBrewers.com. GreatBrewers.com is your online connection to the world of beer. GreatBrewers.com brings the American beer community together. It's all about the brewers on GreatBrewers.com. Check out the Great Beer Test. Every few weeks we've been doing these quizzes. We don't have any questions today, but we'll talk more about it.
You keep talking about those quizzes.
You got to go there, GreatBrewers.com.
I will.
And we're supported by the people at the Good Beer Seal, GoodBeerSeal.com. If you have any questions, you can email us at BeerSessionsRadio@gmail.com or tweet us at @beer_sessions. All right, here we are, Jen Swertman, Jimmy Carboni, and our special guest, Kelly Taylor from Heartland Brewery. How are you guys?
Doing very well, thanks.
All right.
I'm fantastic.
We got a beer going, so it's not too bad.
So what did you bring today, Kelly?
We brought beer from our special barrel reserve series we've got going. This is the Imperial Stout, which is a 10% alcohol Imperial Stout that we aged in bourbon barrels.
All right. And Jen, tell us about, you've been away for a while. You've got some of the coolest stories of anyone in the beer world.
Oh, yeah, and I'll have more coming up, too. I declared this winter to be traveling season for Jen. Even though now it's been so mild, I could stand the winter in New York. But I just got back from Northern California. I went out. I always go at this time of year because I'm from there and my folks are out there, so it's my late Christmas visit. But I managed to sneak in a lot of great beer fun as well. So, yeah.
So did you go to Sierra Nevada Beer Camp?
I went to Beer Camp. I have seen that brewery many times. I have lots of friends there. I've heard about Beer Camp from other people from all over the country who've participated and had a great experience, and it was really fun. They snuck me in at the last minute, and I spent 2 days like treated like a queen or
what
king.
What is Beer Camp?
Beer Camp is what Sierra Nevada has been doing. This was the 67th Beer Camp they've done, and it's a pretty much a two-day little event where they invite bar owners, they brewery people in the industry mostly, to come to Sierra Nevada and to tour it and see what they do out there. But the main thing you do is the group gets together and they come up with a recipe, and we actually brewed the recipe on the pilot system, which is a small system that they use in their regular brewing operations to test batches before they go to their gigantic system. And so it's common with a lot of big breweries that they put these systems in. And then they found that there was this, you know, another way that they could use it more often, and they invite people to come in, and it was a really great experience.
So what do you do at night at Beer Camp?
We drank. We drank at lunch. We ate. They fed us well. They bought us lots of beers, and it was a great group of people. The group I was there with actually happened to be mostly Chico natives. That's my hometown, too. But they were natives who are regulars at the pub. So they, most of them were not in the beer industry, but just big fans of Sierra Nevada, and it was a hell of a lot of fun. We brewed a beer that I think, if all goes well with getting the name, it'll be called the Transporter, and it was a 4.7% porter that is going to be dry hopped with the Torpedo and then nitrogen port. So very excited. Wow. We'll get it in New York too. So I'll keep you posted.
Sierra Nevada is doing some cool things. I know they have they're growing hops and grains. They have an estate series.
Yep.
Their
crops
like?
Get stronger, I mean, and stronger.
Where are the fields? Are
they
the fields,
they own
the
quite a piece of land in Chico, not far from downtown. they bought it, you know, over the years. They bought this. I actually asked how many acres it was, and they said, we're not exactly sure. So they keep expanding in the same facility, although now it looks like they really are working hard to open up, for the first time, open up another brewery in another part of the country, and that's probably going to be in the East Coast. So we'll get even fresher beer out on wow. this coast. But everything's in Chico now, and yes, they're growing malt, they're growing hops. They started with hops. The hops are getting pretty strong, and then they even toy with the idea of putting in like a small malting facility to be able to make that beer completely at home and not have to send it out even to be malted.
Wow, that's great. Yeah. And Kelly, you're here today. Kelly Taylor, tell us about what your relationship is. You're here as Heartland Brewery. We also know you as the brewer for Kelso.
That's pretty much it.
Yeah. Oh, come on.
Yeah, well, you know, I started brewing at Heartland Brewery in 2000. And in 2006, it was allowed to branch off, and Sonya and I started Kelso, started our side thing. I've been brewing on and off. I've been brewing since 1991.
You started in the West Coast,
yeah,
right?
I started in San Diego, actually. Carl Strauss Brewery, San Diego, California, 1991. And then went back up home to Seattle and brewed up there for a number of years. And then Sonya dragged me out here into New York, and I got a job at Heartland. And then I was able to start my own thing. So I've been
brewing
a lot of beer.
Heartland's a cool place. I mean, I know John Bluestein started in, what, 1994,
1995, yeah. The first Heartland opened at Union Square on 17th Street there on Union Square West. And that was a pretty big brew pub, 15-barrel brew system. So we're doing 30 kegs at a shot down there, and that was operational. I brewed there for a couple years, and it was fully operational until 2003. And then we decided, at that point, we had three restaurants, and we had plans to do more, and we decided to brew all the beer in one spot so we could focus on actually brewing the beer as opposed to trying to wrestle with the brew pub. You know, when you're brewing in a brew pub, it's kind of full contact sport, wrestling with the kitchen for resources and trying to get things done before customers come in, and then make sure certain things are happening when customers are in. You know, so it's kind of a battle, and you kind of lose a little bit of, when you're really trying to turn a lot of beer, like the Heartlands go through a lot of beer. Those places are...
How many Heartlands are there now?
There's six Heartlands plus HB Burger, which is next door to the Chop House on 43rd Street. So, and they're all in the big locations, you know, Empire State Building and Times Square and South
High,
Street
high
Seaport
volume.
And Port Authority.
Yeah.
You know, so it's high volume, yeah. I mean, one of the restaurants during the holiday season, the Empire State Building, goes through 80 kegs of beer a week. You know, so it's kind of a challenge to, you know,
to even keep up.
That's
keep
a
up.
Lot of beer.
Yeah.
Let's
system.
Slow down. For like a restaurant, pub, 80 kegs of beer, that's a lot of beer a week.
That's a lot of beer. Yeah, I mean, obviously the rent is kind of big there. Everything's big at the Empire State Building. The amount of beers they go through, their rent, and the whole nine yards.
Square but, footage.
You know, so our challenge with Heartland has always been, from day one, has been to kind of, you know, feed the crowd that wants to really drink a lot of beer and keep up with the demand for the beer, as well as do some interesting, fun, kind of eclectic things. And the most recent thing that we're doing there is the barrel aging stuff.
Kelly, when you think of brew pub, you know, we've talked to you a lot about brewing and your history. We've had you on a few times, and you're really one of our favorite guests. But we've never really talked about brew pubs.
This is one of my favorite radio shows in a container.
Yeah, man. Whoa. What is a brew pub? How do you define that?
What is a brew pub?
Yeah.
Well, a brew pub is somewhere that's serving beer and making food. Making food, serving beer, whatever.
Serving beer that they make.
Yeah, serving beer that they make. Yeah. Right, exactly. Yeah, serving and making the beer on site.
And would it mean you'd only serve the house's beer, or would you also serve other beers?
No, I've seen, you know, and I've worked in brew pubs all over the place, and you see, it just kind of depends on what your capacity is and what your total theme you're trying to be, you know. But
San Diego has a lot of brew pubs, for example, that I think where they really do like have a set number of taps for their own beer, and then they have a few tap handles to bring in guest beer too. But yeah, so
yeah.
That's fair to say. Some of them also double as a beer
think,
bar in that
yeah,
way.
Yeah, and there's a couple of places I know of up north of Seattle that have one beer that they make, and then they have four or five other beers on, just because they have like a little 5 gallon system, and they thought maybe they would be able to, or a little 10 gallon system, and they thought they'd be able to keep up with the demand, and then the place gets busy, and then all of a sudden they can't keep up. But still a brew pub, you know, they're making beer on site and serving the beer that they make on a regular basis, so you could go in at any given time and get a beer that they make there.
If any listeners want to call in, we're here Tuesday at 5, 718-497-2128. If you want to share any of your favorite brew pubs around the world, let us know. So, Jen, you've been to some brew pubs in San Diego?
Yeah, I used to work for one. My start was at a place called the Wing Coop Brewing Company in Denver, Colorado. And for a long time, it was, I don't know where it stands now, but it was the largest brew pub in the country. And they brewed all the beer that they served there. I mean, when I first got there, back in the early 90s, I guess they had a couple bottles of Coors Light lying around for people who really were confused. And then they did away with that as fast as they could. But yeah, it was fun because the brewers were working behind glass and you could see them doing, you know, it made people more intrigued with the process, I think, too.
Yeah.
And fun because, of course, it's as fresh as it can be when it's brewed right there.
So, you know, it's funny that you mentioned that. If I could just kind of jump in for a second, is a lot of the brew pubs that I've worked with, whether it's in San Diego or in Seattle or up north of Seattle or in New York, you get that crowd that comes in. No matter what, you know, microbrewing is not a new thing, right? People still come in and say, give me a Bud.
Or something. Oh, yeah.
Give me a Coors. And you're like, well, we don't make that. We only serve the beer that we make. You know, if it's 100% made on site, and you're not serving anything else. And then they say, well, how about a Heineken? And you're like, well,
I don't
make Heineken.
Understand.
Actually, you're getting further away. You're getting colder.
This is the sort of education that I've based my career
on. Sure. Well, that's what our job, you know, that's our thing, right? Is just to get out there and show people the error in their ways.
And also, guide. And that's when I developed all my greatest skills for connecting people to the beer that they actually want very quickly, because we were really, really busy. And there were a lot of people who were walking in there all the time who were confused. We had a list of, you know, 9-13 beers at a time, and they didn't recognize any of them. So I had to come up with a method very, very quickly of how to connect people to the right product, because I knew that we needed to get this. We needed to get this done, and we needed to get it done effectively. So I still use those same skills now at the Blind Tiger. When people are coming in and they want to know more about craft brewed beer, and they're still trying to learn the language and to know what they want to, how to ask for what they're looking for, and I'm good at kind of picking it out of what they're telling me,
right,
and helping them along.
Yeah, and that's the thing, is that's our job really is to help people along, because we don't want them to feel. A lot of people come in and they feel insecure when they come into
intimidated.
They don't know what, you know, so they just go with what they know. How about Samuel Adams? Do you have that? Like, no, but you know, what do you like? You know, and if you can work with the people and show them, they actually want to know what they like and help them out.
Then you got a customer enamored.
Yeah. So that's kind of the goal.
Their eyes light up as you give them the beer that they were hoping to find.
So what are your two favorite beers from Heartland, Kelly, that you're making right now?
Well, one of them that we do year-round is the Farmer John's Oatmeal Stout. Just really nice and creamy. It's poured on a nitrogen pour. It's 6% alcohol. It's got that roasted coffee, espresso-y, creamy goodness. You can get that all the time. And the other one that we do seasonally, not that we're doing right now, that we do seasonally in the fall, is the Smiling Pumpkin Ale. I really enjoy that pumpkin pie-esque kind of quality of the beer. We cut the cinnamon way back on it, so you get a little bit more of the molasses and the rum raisin character from the molasses. It's just a really luscious, multi-dimensional pumpkin ale, and then we age that in bourbon barrels as well. I'm having a lot of fun with the barrel aging stuff right now. At least my guys are having a lot of fun with it, and I'm buying them barrels and giving them to them, and they're turning
toys
the product
for
around.
Brewers.
Yeah, it's great. Yeah. Yeah, and they just, you know, just kind of keep turning the barrel stuff around, and that's where this Imperial Stout came from. And actually, if you mix this Imperial Stout with a little bit of the Smiling Pumpkin Ale, then you get a really interesting combination. So we've been having fun with that too.
All right, mixing and matching. There's a lot more in store on the show. We're going to have a call-in from Washington State, a brew pub in Washington State, and we're actually going to have a small brew pub from Manhattan. On the air. When we come back on Beer Sessions Radio.
I see you talking, with all of my friends.
Welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. I'm Jimmy Carboni from Jimmy's Number 43. Tonight we have Kelly Taylor from Heartland Brewery and Kelso, and Jen Swerben from the Blind Tiger. So Jen, Sierra Nevada Beer Camp.
Yeah.
I want a couple anecdotes. Like, I want fun stories. Come on.
Well, I had the most exotic bartending experience I've had in 18 years of bartending, because they have this fantastic thing that I personally call the contraption. And it's
this
a little vehicle.
Good.
It's a vehicle that has about 10 or 12 seats running down the sides, and with bike seats and bike pedals. And you sit at a bar on running down both sides. And then there's a guy who's at the helm with the steering wheel who's driving the thing. And it's covered with tassels. It's like a little trolley car. And there are two beers on tap on the vehicle, and they use it for beer camp to take people to the far reaches of the property, because it really is, you know, quite a big, large piece of land. And to show us all the composting and things, you have to go far out there. So we jumped on this thing. I had the pleasure of being on this vehicle in Denver a couple years ago, but I've never gotten to bartend on it. And it was a little dream of mine. And so they said, hey, Jen, why don't you bartend for us? So as everyone's pedaling and they're driving this thing to go wherever we were going, I was taking orders and pouring beers on it and serving them to people down the middle.
Wow.
Down the middle alley. So I had a two-sided bar in motion. It was fantastic.
Wow.
So
You have so many great stories and so many cool things. You
know, I'm really lucky to have a lot of experiences in this world, in this beer world. I've been given a lot of opportunities, and I'm trying to take advantage of all of them. So it's all fun.
Right. One more anecdote from beer camp.
What else? Oh, I got to try, it's not in its final stage, but a beer called the Brux that was brewed at Sierra Nevada, but they collaborated with Russian River. So it's got some funky wild yeast in it, and most people have not gotten to try that one yet. We also got to do some triangular lab work. They took us into the lab, which I love, all the quality control and learning more about that. And, I guess I could go on and on. Then there's the whole, like, moonlight experience. I got to brew at a brewery in Santa Rosa with a good friend of mine, too. So wow. I had lots of beer fun.
So you think this Sierra Nevada, do you consider them a top-notch brewery?
Absolutely. And I think that that's one of the greatest things about beer camp and their development of this whole beer camp idea and bringing people to Chico, because this town is isolated in the Sacramento Valley. It's a little college town, and it has this great brewery. And so most people have never been there. And they're, you know, in this day and age where small breweries are booming, you know, popping up everywhere, there's a lot of misunderstanding, too, about what Sierra Nevada is. And people say, a lot of people think that, oh, it's just like Sam Adams, and it's just huge, and no, you know, maybe they're contracting all over. I mean, there are a lot of like odd ideas thrown around. And so to get people to come to Chico and actually see how incredible the place is and what they're doing and the quality and the time they take to design everything so well so that they have maximum efficiency and they're the most green brewery of that size, I think, that probably exists. Wow. It's 10,000 solar panels, paying attention to, you know, even the CO2 coming off of fermentation is cleaned and reused to pump the beer in the pub. I mean, it's all those ideas that they can throw out into the industry. And the more people who know that it's possible, maybe the more people will implement those ideas for sustainability.
Well, and the most important thing, really, is their beer tastes excellent.
That you know, too.
Well, I mean, that's what it comes down to. And that's the primary difference between a great brewery and a marketing brewery.
Especially a brewery that size where every drop is still, like, the quality is maintained.
And they've
they're
grown
meticulous
a lot it. Over the last decade. They've had tremendous
they've
growth
grown
over the last
since
decade.
Since the beginning.
And their quality, in my opinion, has not deteriorated, which is a lot of breweries will grow tremendously and their quality will deteriorate.
Agreed.
And they
excellent.
Have not. That,
hey,
that
we just
remarkable.
Got a special guest on the air. We've been trying to reach, talking about small breweries, brew pubs today in particular. There's a place up in Yakima Valley in Washington State. It's called Snipes Mountain Brewery. The brewer is named Chad Roberts. He's on the air right now. Chad, can you hear us?
Yes, I can.
Chad, thanks for taking our call. We just wanted to say hello, and you're on the Beer Sessions Radio. We're talking about small brew pubs today.
Oh, sounds good.
All right. Now, you've got a pretty cool story. I mean, tell us where you're located. Where is Snipes Mountain Brewery?
Well, it's in the town of Sunnyside, Washington, which is in the Yakima Valley, like you said, about 40 minutes south of actual Yakima. We're at about the tail end, right before the hops stop growing. So we're just at the end of the Yakima Valley, pretty much.
All right. Kelly Taylor, he spent some time up in Seattle. Kelly, do you know that area?
Yeah, well, I was born and raised up in the Seattle area, up north of Seattle, and I've spent I don't know if they're doing it anymore, but Hop Union used to do a hop.
I went last year.
They used to do
I went to Hop and Brew School.
I don't know if it was a brew school or not, but it was a big barbecue in the backyard after the harvest, and they got about 20 breweries down there.
That's
a
different one.
And we'd just go down there, and we'd have pitchfork fondue and go get all drunk. Every, you know, you'd
be
about 40 brewers
and
about 20 kegs.
Whenever the Ralphs can pull them off.
Yeah, so I spent a lot of real hazy weekends down in the Yakima Valley, and one of them I got hazed by Burt Grant a number of years ago from
Grants.
Wow. Yeah. So yeah, I know that area. It's all a blur, but it's wonderful.
So Chad, are you from that area, Chad?
Yeah, I'm from Yakima.
Yeah. So how did you get started? I saw something about you. You were brought in by a brewer, and suddenly he trained you, and next thing you know, you're the brewer. How did you get started? Tell us the whole story.
Okay, well, I was working at a local bottle shop, the beer shop in Yakima, and I was home brewing, and I was just basically going to hop union parties and just trying to get in with the industry guys, and I got lucky enough to, I go to Hop and Brew School pretty much every year, and in the 2010 session, I just was walking back from lunch, and the head brewer of Snipes, Chris Miller, asked me if I wanted to brew, and so I came down next Monday and brought in my my VJCP judging results for a homebrew competition and my resume, and began assistant brewing in August of 2010.
I was in brew school that time. Were you in the first session or the second?
I was in. I usually went to the second.
Oh, so I missed you. I missed you by a couple days. Sorry, I just couldn't help but ask.
Oh, yeah.
Go ahead.
No, totally. The second session was usually the best one because that's when people are staying the weekend.
Right.
Yeah.
We had fun, though, too.
yeah. It's a great time. And so I just began assistant brewing, and he let me do I tried to reverse engineer an old Grant's winter beer, and then end of 2010, he told me he had been working on a brewery in Northern California, and in March he put in his 2 weeks, and I got the chance, and everything's worked out pretty well.
All right, man.
So tell us about the place.
Oh, it's we opened in July of '97. It's locally owned by a family, the Bleasner family here in Sunnyside, and it's God, the square footage is probably ridiculous. It's probably a 3,000 or 4,000 square foot, two story. Looks like somewhat like a ski lodge. It's a big big, you know, log and stone contraption. It's pretty wonderful place to be brewing at. And then I've got a 15 barrel system in the glassed in enclosure where they keep the animals and it's pretty cool. We have 14 taps, and we have a wood-fired pizza oven that we cook everything in, and it's pretty much the biggest, nicest place in the valley, if not the whole, you know, state for a brewery our size. It's quite grandiose.
Chad, right now, what's your favorite beer on tap at Snipes Mountain Brewery?
Right now, you know, I'd have to say it's going to sound pedestrian, but I really like this ESB I just made. It's a 6.7 about, and it's just really smooth, and it's actually one of our earliest recipes I dug up and just redid. No one does an ESB anymore, and I was bored, so. That one's turned out real nice. You know, I like the IPA. I'm a hophead myself, but we've got a chocolate oatmeal stout that's great right now and whatnot. But yeah, I'd have to say the ESB.
That's that's the fun part of brew pubs is you're like, what am I in the mood for doing?
Yeah,
you know, that's the great thing. You have your standards. You have
you
the
don't
beers
have to
that
commit
are,
to doing the same recipe are, over and over.
You know, you have a few of those you have to do.
Of course you do, but you know, I mean, you don't have to commit to doing, you know, like.
Yeah, you can brew, you know, whatever, you know, Jimmy asked me earlier, what's my favorite beer and that we brew, and it's just like, well, it's kind of, if I have an inkling for something, I brew it, and then that happens to be my favorite for a while, you know, until I get tired of it.
Tired of that,
and
yeah.
It's like, oh, it's just, you know, we're going to do another batch of this now, let's pull out that old ESB, you know, it's the same kind of thing, it's great.
We haven't made that recipe in a while.
Yeah, and then you tweak it a little bit, and be like, hey, you know what, I got a whole bunch of these hops I'm trying to get rid of, and let's just make this a whole bunch of Styrian Goldings, you know, just throw them in
that
there.
That actually happened with Tom Baker, who used to have Heavyweight Brewing in New Jersey, and he realized he was successful, and people loved his beer, and he was making incredible beer. But he realized after the fact that he hated having to do the same beer over and over and over and over. And he was actually meant to be a brew pub owner. And so, you know, years later, now they have Earth Bread and Brewing, where he and his wife run that place, and it's wonderful. And it gave him that flexibility that he didn't find in, you know, production brewing.
So that Earth Bread is like a brew pub.
It's definitely a brew pub, yeah.
Wow. Well, Chad, when you make a beer, what size batches do you make?
I generally shoot for a net 15 barrel. You know, that's what all of our serving tanks and whatnot are. So, like, I've got a Belgian Golden Strong carbonating right now. I get about 14 barrels of that. Some of the specialties I spec a little low just to not be sitting on beer, but generally 15.
So did you learn everything you know about brewing at Snipes Mountain Brewery?
You know, I learned how to operate the system. I learned the commercial side, but most of my technical knowledge comes from just packing my brain with podcasts and way too many homebrewing books and whatnot.
How long were you homebrewing?
I've homebrewed. That's the weird part. I probably only homebrewed maybe about 12 to 15 times.
That's hilarious.
Yeah, I just didn't really. I read too much and learned too much to really want to brew without having temperature control and all grain, and I just didn't have the money to do that. So instead, I just set myself to studying and then just trying to buy and drink as much of other people's beer as possible.
Wow. So up in Yakima, where you are, what was the store you worked at, the bottle shop?
Yeah, the beer shop. We've got about 400 or so bottles, 9 taps, and I still do it today. I just buy every new beer that comes in. I buy one of it, drink it, you know, write, make some notes, and go on from
and
there. I rarely, if ever, drink anything twice.
So if we were going to do a brewer's challenge right now and pick a style, pick a type of beer, what beer would you like everyone else to try to make?
Okay. Gosh, a style for everyone, you know, I would have to say something like an English mild. We do one of those, and it's a real hard thing to nail. I'm still working on trying to keep that gravity low, but, you know, have all the appropriate percentages of specialty malt. It's a challenge.
It is a tough beer to make and to enjoy. I mean, I have noticed in New York there's a small brewery named Barrier, and they're making a couple of variations on a mild. And I got a beer from Spain. It was called a Guinot. It was one of the Shelton Brothers imports, and it came in at 2.5%.
Oh, wow.
So I don't know. There's something to say about a flavorful, you know, easy drinking beer. Kelly, tell us about session beers, because if we're talking about milds, doesn't that kind of bring you into session beers?
Well, yeah. The mild is actually, when we opened up the Heartland at the Empire State Building, the first beer we did was an ESB, you know, I was being really clever, but it was a mild, actually. It was
three. What was the ABV?
3.5%. I just used all English mild malt and English noble hops, and tried to put a whole bunch of the hops in the background. My target on that was something very similar to the Southern Tier Hop Sun. That's very, very minerally, nice hop nose, nice crisp, light finish to it, but kind of marrying that to the English mild style and getting a little bit more of a maltiness in the back note. And those are interesting beers to do. And then I've been a really big fan of some of our just American wheat beers, revisiting the American wheat beer and not doing the German style, you know, banana clove or a lot of the Belgian yeast, but just doing a nice, clean American yeast and getting a really interesting wheat that's got... You can get some really nice small batch wheats now that are even made in the Hudson Valley that have a very... fruity, bright, interesting character to them, that if you just kind of let that shine, it makes, you can really get an interesting texture and character out of a beer without having to put a lot of other stuff in it.
The other thing is that when you have these light, sort of easy drinking, simple, nuanced styles, you can't mask as many mistakes. You know, it's kind of like the Pilsner is very difficult. You know, and right. It's like, because as soon as you start throwing in a bunch of hops and you've got a bunch of dark roasted malt, it's amazing how you can sort of mask some things that might not be going completely right. So I imagine that an English mild would be difficult for that reason, too.
Yeah, it is a challenge.
Hey, Chad, we're going to take a short break. But before we go, tell us a couple things. We've got listeners all around the country, Michigan, Massachusetts, even in England, Florida, San Diego. What would you like to tell people around the world about what you're doing right now?
Oh, gosh.
a little pressure.
I don't know. I would say stop trying to buy all the hops I want.
come to Yakima. Come to Yakima.
Yeah, that's, you know, I think...
I love the sports center in Yakima.
Hop school is open to the world now, to homebrewers, to everybody, beer aficionados. And, you know, I grew up in Yakima, so I'm spoiled, but I think everyone should come out and see a hop harvest. And it's an amazing thrill. I see the looks on the faces of the brewers that come out here and just think I live in heaven. I'd like more people to think that. And we've got two new breweries opening up in Yakima within the next year or so.
Wow.
And it's just getting out of control. And I think everyone should come to Yakima Beer Week and the Fresh Hop Ale Festival.
When is that?
It's going to be this October. The first week in October.
All right.
Congratulations on all your success too.
Oh, well, thank
That's
you very
great
much.
Story.
I still don't believe it.
Sure.
It sounds great. So Yakima Beer Week.
We'll try your
in
beer
October.
Sometime.
Google it, right? How about
yeah,
that?
Yeah, Google it. Mostly Google the Fresh Hop Ale Festival is the cherry on the Sunday there. It's 25 breweries at least, all fresh hop, wet hop beers, and, you know, it's about 3,000 people. It's just a great time, and it's not to be missed.
All right. Well, Chad, you're welcome to stay on there if you want. We're going to take a short break. We're going to come back with Anderson Hill. He's got a small brew pub in Manhattan.
Can't wait to talk
on Beer
to him.
Sessions Radio.
When I say I'm in love, you best believe I'm in love, L-U-V. To me. I'm back, you know I can't be wasting.
looking for a kiss.
Hey, welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on Heritage Radio Network. We've got a great cast tonight. We've got Jen Swartman from Blind Tiger from Sierra Nevada Beer Camp. We got Kelly Taylor, Heartland Brewery, Kelso. And we got a new guy on the scene, Anderson DeLima.
Yep.
He's got the balls. He's opened up a small brew pub called 508 Gastro Pub in downtown Manhattan.
That's right.
Welcome, man.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Yes, we're pretty excited. Like, I always wanted to brew. Like, finally I had a chance, and response has been great. Right now we have just 10 beers. We're serving 10 beers, 6 draft, 4 by the bottle.
Anderson's been sitting there for half an hour waiting to talk. So
yeah, just
he's ready to go. But before you start, I'm going to say a couple of things. Tell us the website for your gastropub.
We are 508nyc.com.
508NYC.
Yeah.
And Jen, you were just there the other night, weren't you?
Yeah, it was really funny. I had a friend, as I was getting off my shift on Saturday night, I had a good friend from the Blind Tiger who was like, hey, you want to come to dinner with me? I want to check out this new brew pub. And I was like, I've heard of 508, and I haven't heard anything specific. And I'm like, yeah, I'll join you. So we sat at the bar, and we had a bunch of amazing food, and we tried a bunch of beers. And then Anderson, I think you might have met my friend Kent before. He kind of went, oh, there he is, and flagged him down. And then he was so gracious and welcomed us down into the basement. And I saw the brewery and I tried all the beer. And then toward the end of our conversation, I said, hey, do you want to be on the radio show sometime? And he goes, oh, I'm going to be on Tuesday. And I went, oh, I'll see you then. Because I knew I was scheduled. I had no idea who was going to be on here with
us. That's awesome. But I was there, too, a couple months ago. And I knew the old space. It was an old restaurant space.
Yeah, we bought a place 3.5 years ago. It used to be a different restaurant. We took it over. And
from Giorgio
De Luca.
So one of the Dean De Luca original owners.
Yes, we took it over from him. And yeah, it's been fun. It's been a great ride. And about 6 months ago, we started selling our beers. I started actually home brewing like 3 years ago. And, you know, like my wife gave me a homebrew kit. And then after a year home brewing, I realized that I want to take this to the next level. And we submitted the papers and they kept doing small batches here and there, reading a lot of stuff, trying to educate myself.
Was it difficult to get to transition your license to that kind of license? Because
yes.
Nobody else has done this in Manhattan that I know of, where
yes.
they start as a restaurant and then transition into being a brew pub.
Yes, actually, it was a lot of, it took a lot of time. It was like about over a year and a half. It was complicated. Like, we had to resubmit a bunch of stuff. The first lawyer we had, he wasn't really that knowledgeable about that, so we had to resubmit some stuff. But at the end, you know, everything went well. And yeah, we're pretty happy. We're looking to expand because we have a small system. I have just 7 pharmaceutical fermenters of like 55 gallons.
It's a one barrel system. It's tiny.
Yeah, and we've been pouring like some months, like about 3,000 pints for a small restaurant. That's pretty good.
Yeah. And honestly, for the size of your place and the size of the brewery that I saw, to have 10 beers available is a huge lineup.
Well, Kelly, Kelly, tell us this. What did you say you're making? How much beers? 3,000 pints.
There are months that we do
on
that.
Is it a one-barrel system?
One-barrel system.
Kelly, what do you think about that? Translate for us.
Well, who do I think about it? Well,
translate.
That's, you know, it's a lot of work.
He's
cranking out a lot of beer out of there.
A lot
of
planning. I mean, you got to plan your fermentations, everything, you know, in order to have. I don't have bright tanks, so I got an AC, got a little cold bar to chill on my AC to cool a room. So that's where I clean my beer. So it's fun.
What day did you just kind of wake up, and you have partners, right?
Yes, my wife and her parents too.
So how did you decide? One day you woke up and you said, you know what, guys, I really want to start
brewing.
She's
the one who gave him the brewing kit. So she kind of was the catalyst for the whole thing.
I mean, I was born in Brazil. And when I was about around 19 years old, I was going to pre-college with my prep, whatever. And I ended up choosing, my idea was to go to school for architecture. End up going for industrial design. But anyway, so I was trying to, my idea was to become a brewer. But in Brazil at that time, the only professional school for brewing, I would have to work for InBev before they merged with the Belgian company, becoming InBev. So I would have to have a degree in engineering, like pretty much production engineering. That's what I would say there in Brazil. And in order to, so it would be a master's degree. And my dad is an engineer, and then I thought, no, that's boring. I want to have fun. So I kind of gave up the idea. And years later, you know, I had the chance. We were just sitting at the bar with some friends, and a friend of my wife heard that, you know, like she gave a homebrew kit to her husband, and I said, I'd love to brew. My wife gave me a kit, and that's how it started, reading a lot of books and, you know, hit and miss.
So how many days a week do you brew?
I brew today a double batch of Gelze. We're going to start, and tomorrow we're brewing again, then the day after we are bottling and kegging. It's
should be about, what, 15 to 17 times a month for 3,000?
Yes.
Yeah,
that's,
15 to 17.
That's accurate. Yeah,
that's about right. So are you brewing a lot more than you thought you'd be?
No.
Yeah, it was about what you thought. Yeah. Because that's what a lot of, we were talking about it earlier, a lot of the brew pubs will run into that problem. Is like, okay, I'm spending all time brewing, which is fine, but I got a restaurant to run too. So that's when people start to make that decision to either get a bigger equipment, if that's an option, or to bring in a guest tap and have and take that load off of the brewing system.
Yeah, we don't really have space. I mean, I don't have space to buy. I mean, I have a Manhattan storage place where I keep my bottles, literally.
Yeah,
we got a dolly and then we walk 2 blocks and put it over there to condition bottles. So yeah, we're looking for a space. I'm pricing brew houses right now. It's kind of prices are really up. I found a place in England that I'm kind of flirting with. I kind of like the romantic.
In England?
Yeah, English style brewing. You know, like.
So would you go to England and make beer?
No, I would bring an English kid here. That's my plan.
An English person?
No, the
equipment.
Equipment, thank you.
Brewing.
Yeah.
And what is the system?
It would be that this one is a 10 English barrel, you know, just like a simple infusion mash, you know, like no mash paddle. Like, very simple, you know, like, straight and forward. No, I mean, of course, I would love to have, you know, like, steam-jacked stuff, but it's just too expensive. I cannot afford that, so I found this guy. He makes, like, great equipment, good efficiency, and that's probably the direction we're going in the near future.
So you're, and Kelly, too, so you're saying they have an English system that's different than other systems?
Yes, it's pretty much the basic. It's not even the old system. I don't remember the name now. Like, they have the brick around. You might remember, you guys been brewing for longer than I. But, like, it's very simple. It's just wood around, and it's just a simple fuse. You got to go in with the shovel.
Is this a used system?
No, it's new.
It's new. Because I think I've seen a used system like that on
Pro Brewer?
On Pro Brewer,
yeah. There was a 7-barrel.
Yeah, that was a pretty cool-looking little system. But, yeah, I know kind of what you're talking about.
So there's a website you can go to learn about systems. Is it Pro Brewer?
Yeah, well, Pro Brewer is kind of an online. Yeah, ProBrewer.com. It's kind of an online forum.
Buying and selling systems.
Yeah,
there's
a classified. Yeah, and people will post questions and have.
It's a huge.
It's a great.
It happens all the time where breweries expand or breweries don't survive, and there's equipment out there, and there are a lot of breweries who are trying to open. So they're shopping for the things that other people are trying to get rid of. So it's fantastic.
And you gotta be really quick to get some equipment.
Next day's
gone.
let's get tough. Yeah. Again with Anderson de Lima.
That's right.
Tell me, I said
Carmen Hill. That's my wife's last name.
Yeah, I'm in trouble, right?
No, you're fine.
I get along. Hopefully,
please fill me up. So I'm drinking. What am I drinking? The Montezuma.
Montezuma Imperial Stout.
The Montezuma's fantastic.
This is really
beer.
This is really good. One thing when you have like a brew pub or just, you know, local house beers, that like if I went to your place 508 and I walked in and I wanted a certain style of beers,
nice effect.
I would have to adapt my desires to what you have, right?
Yeah, I mean,
because in Manhattan it's like, wow, I can go a lot of places and get Belgian beers, English beers, you know, great American craft beers. But I went to your place, it's like, whoa, I have to actually figure out what I want to drink, because you have your own styles too, don't you?
Yes, and I mean, we have a sommelier, we have a big wine list. So our sommelier is getting his Cicerone, so he helps a lot with, you know, like flavors and stuff, pairings, whatever somebody wants. And we have, like, our bartenders are pretty knowledgeable. And so they end up, like, you know, walking you through. If you ask for a Bud Light, you know, probably we have a cream ale that's coming back on tap. This is the last keg of Belgian Strong. So usually that's, like, our entry-level kind of beer that we have. And then I try to have some exciting stuff and some, like, more, like, you know, entry-level. I have a Belgian wheat. I like, you know, European wheats. Nothing against America, but I think they've been doing that for a long time. I've been having fun with decoction. Sometimes I get like, then I run upstairs and I put it to boil, then I bring it down to right there. Like, seriously.
I am so excited about his operation too, because his beer is good, but you know, there for so long, there's been the excuse that's like, oh, you know, there can't be a brew pub, a brewery in Manhattan because real estate is too expensive. And this, and Anderson has found a way to do it. And so I just want to support you because,
you.
You know, it that expense is real.
It's fun. I mean, it is work, but like I just, at the end of the day, you know, like if you want to make good beer or like try to, I mean, there's no space. Like part of the pasta table now became my grain storage. It's like we make the fresh pasta. It's space is very limited, but like, I try to.
And the food really was good.
On this note, let's bring in, we've got an email question. It's from Christian N. in Indianola, Iowa. IA means Iowa, right? Iowa. Okay.
This is
great. I've been thinking about, is it Iowa or Indiana?
I know. Iowa.
I think Indiana's Iowa. ID. Iowa. So okay. Iowa.
Indianola, that's Iowa.
Idaho.
Oh, no.
All right. This is a serious issue because there's a, they mentioned fiance, so, okay. I've been thinking, this is like, he needs your advice, guys. Help him. I've been thinking about switching from extract brewing to an all-grain setup. And as a side note, you know, many homebrewers work with extract, and all-grain's different for homebrewers. But any advice on how to proceed so my new roommate, who's also my fiance, doesn't kill me? Christian N. from Indianola, Iowa. Let's start with Kelly.
Well, first of all, very quickly, you can make excellent beers out of extract. I did that for a couple years. The difference is kind of like buying that Betty Crocker cake box. You know, at the grocery store, you can make a nice cake out of the Betty Crocker cake box, but it's nothing like making it from scratch once you get it down. So it's also a very big time commitment to jump into the all-grain portion of it. You're doubling the amount of time that you're going to take on a brew day. That having been said, if your fiancé is not good with it, then you better figure it out now. because my fiance or my girlfriend at the time, now my wife and mother of my two children, was good with it, and that's a good combination. If she's not good with it, you're gonna run into problems.
If she's not good with it, you might want to get a different fiance.
Yeah, so I'd get
that. Might be a red flag.
I'd go all grain now and see what happens.
Yeah, Anderson, what about you?
Well, like he said, like I think you know, extract's a good way to start, but like. If you have a little bit of space and you can like get a small system, you can do like, I don't know, like 2.5 gallons at a time or like in a little cooler or something like that.
I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, guys, but
wrong.
Between homebrew,
oh, sorry.
I think, you know, there are only a few pieces of equipment you really need to upgrade the system to whole grain, all grain. And, you know, you might need a bigger pot for the stove, but you need like a lot or ton of sorts, which can just be 2 5-gallon food grade buckets with a bunch of holes drilled in them. If
yeah,
you want
well,
to
that's
go
what I did.
Brew
in a bag.
Yeah.
And then some method for cooling the wort fast enough so you don't create bacteria. So it's not that much, you know, equipment. But probably, you know, what my thought is, maybe when the beer you make is that much better, then your fiance might be on board.
Right. Right.
We'll ask
you
to drink better beer.
Yeah, it's definitely, you know, worth a trip to the homebrew shop, but to Home Depot and figure out what you need, make it. That's what I did when I made the transition because I didn't want to make the $100 investment in the whole thing. I just wanted to see how it went. So I spent the time, like $20, went to Home Depot, got the 2 5-gallon buckets, drilled some holes, got some copper tubing for a heat exchanger, and then I was off to the races, and then eventually started replacing the homemade stuff, the homemade equipment with regular nice equipment and work your way up. So
see, it's
a
transition. Small commitment. And if you find the relationship is more valuable than your brewing and your relationship's falling apart as a result of the brewing, then you can quickly abandon the $20 investment.
That's a different
radio
show.
Maybe you want to just go take a home
brewing. And we'll refer you to somebody else.
Like maybe you should go take a home brewing class with your fiance.
Ooh, there you go.
And, you know, start bonding that way.
At 508 Gastropub.
Well, we're going to give a little shout out to some of the events happening in New York and other places. Coming up next Tuesday, January 31st, it's kind of an important event for a lot of reasons. It's called Farm Plus Beer Expo. One reason is cool brewers like Kelly from Kelso are going to be serving beers that are made with local ingredients, as in Sierra Nevada or Kelso, ingredients like grains and hops that are from their own region. Another reason it's going to support a farmer who suffered in the Hurricane Irene last year, John Grzynski. We know him very well, and We're organizing the event. And if you're around in New York City, go to Brooklyn Brewery next Tuesday night for Farm Plus Beer Expo. You can learn more at goodbeerseal.com. And also other events coming up. Well, check out goodbeerseal.com. It's our site. You can learn more about all the great beer bars in New York and links to a lot of other people around the country. We had a big article recently about a beer bar in Milwaukee. So there's a lot going on at goodbeerseal.com. I'd like to thank our sponsors at greatbrewers.com who have helped to bring this podcast to you tonight. Beer Sessions Radio, supported by the Good Beer Seal. You can find Beer Sessions Radio on our Facebook page, Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. You can also follow us on Twitter at beer_ _